You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. 2015, you're listening to episode 153. My name is Rob. Mr. Giggly there is Jason Slingerland.
It's just funny to me that it's May 4th.
May the 4th. We have a special guest. Bad. Didn't work. We have a special guest also with us on the line. We have our good pal and our benefactor and our lord and master. We have the great and mighty AJ Porfirio from Van Ryder Games. Welcome, sir.
What's up?
How you doing?
On the show.
It's good to have you.
Yeah, we're thrilled.
Yeah, so I kind of ride on the top of the van. You guys are inside.
You know what?
Better sound quality inside.
I've been wondering, because when we first met and I connected Van Ryder with your face and your first name, I just assumed that your last name was Van Ryder.
We did think you were AJ Van Ryder at first.
It was like it was like 8 or 9 months later that Jason was like, no, dude.
It wasn't that long for me to be clear. I figured it out pretty quick.
So it's been bugging me ever since. Where does that name come from?
Yeah, so it actually comes from the middle names of my first two boys. So,
oh, nice.
Our third son, Leo, was not yet around when I started the company. So otherwise, I would have probably had to figure something else out. My oldest's middle name is actually Vance, and my second Caleb's name is middle name is Ryder, and Vance Ryder doesn't quite have the same ring to it, so we kind of shortened that, and that Van Ryder was like, okay, I can make a cool logo for that. And so that's kind of how it was born.
I've always wondered that. That's cool.
Yeah, good to know. Breaking news here on Building the Game. A real scoop. Yeah, so AJ is our best pal in the whole wide world because you made the official announcement through your newsletter a little ways or a few weeks back, but we're having you on here today to officially, formally on the podcast announce
that Van Ryder Games has signed Saloon Tycoon to our label, and we're thrilled about it.
Yes, I'm super excited, and it's exciting. Thrilled, and I couldn't be more excited to work with you on this. And we're a big happy family here. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I like you guys. I like you guys first, and I like your game. So I'm thrilled to add another one. I think it's going to be great. I'm really excited. Kind of, once we get through Salvation Road to move on to Ramblers and then Saloon Tycoon. I think, through the end of this year and into 2016, it's going to be a really exciting time.
Absolutely.
So, tell us about Salvation Row, because that is your hot thing that's happening right now. And we want to know everything there is to know about it.
Yeah. So, we're about a week from launch at this point. So, been hard at work on that. That game I signed from Design Studio MVP Board Games, which is Michael Kelly and Peter Gusis. I think you guys got to meet them at Unpub.
Yeah, nice guys.
They were there again this year. But that I signed that Unpub 2014.
14.
Yep. So been working hard on that, and it's time to go. I mean, the timing sort of worked out to where it's sort of right in line with the Fury Road launch.
Nice.
So Salvation Road is a game sort of set in that same style of universe, a post-apocalyptic world, kind of wasteland. And definitely there was major inspiration from sort of the original Mad Max, particularly right. Road Warrior.
Yeah.
For Salvation Road. So, yeah, the game, it's a cooperative game, and essentially you play as characters that are holed up in this compound, and basically just fighting for survival. They're fighting against, apocalyptic elements. So there's famine, there's war, there's pestilence and death. And then you have to deal with having hero characters and survivor characters. And the difference is hero characters have a special ability that helps you. Survivors have special abilities that can hinder you. Yep. So one of them's like a coward and he doesn't want to do any, you know, he's scared, right? So, but the survivors still let you use actions. So they you still need them for their actions, but you have to sort of work around some kind of limitation. And I know, Jason, you played it last year at Origins, or at least.
Yep, Rob did too, I think, right?
Didn't, yeah,
we sure did. Both did. Oh, yeah, both did. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, good. So you guys know. And it's there's been a lot of changes since then based on you guys' feedback and others. But, yeah, so you're doing that, and you're during the course of the game, you're collecting resources. So there's four key resources, most important of them being fuel, so that, you know, because the ultimate goal is you need to stockpile resources to load up your truck, and you're going to make this trip to salvation. So there's fuel, food, ammo, and medical supplies. So the tricky part about the game is you have to collect all these resources, but to survive, you're going to also have to be using some of them during the course of the game. I mean, if guys start getting wounded, you're going to need to use medical supplies to heal them. So it's kind of a push and pull of, oh man, we know we're going to need this resource, you know, for the road trip to salvation. Mm-hmm. But if I don't use this medical kit now, I'm going to die. So it's sort of that balance, and you have to weigh the pros and cons, and eventually you know, unless you lose before you can even make the trip, which can happen, but you're many times going to be able to say, hey, we got to go now, or we're not going to be able to go at all. And you'll travel to salvation, basically resolving cards and trying to match up resources. And if you're able to do it and match them all up, then you're gonna make it to salvation and win the game. But the catch is, you don't always necessarily know exactly what you're going to need. The way the road cards work is, if they're face down, you can see on the face of the car, or I'm sorry, on the back of the card, hey, we're going to need, say, ammo and fuel for this obstacle. But you don't know exactly how many of each of those you will need. Now, there's ways to like flip it over and find out exactly what you need, but there's usually a cost to doing that. And most times, you're not going to know every single card on the road, so you kind of have to. You have to kind of go, okay, let's get four extra food so that we, you know, this card's the worst case. When we flip it over, we'll be able to cover it. So it's that. That's kind of in a nutshell. There's a whole lot more to it. But really thrilled to finally get it up on Kickstarter. It's going to be our first big box game. So, you know, I face some new challenges as a publisher, kind of moving up to that bigger size game. Mm-hmm. There's things that I've learned that, you know, I haven't done so far with the smaller games I've published up to this point. So it's been a great experience, and I'm really excited to get it out there. I hope that, you know, those listening and the Board Game Geek community and the Kickstarter community in general will support the game.
Yeah, and it's we can attest that it's a super fun game. Even the early version we played was
right.
Was super fun.
With a bunch of newbies who didn't know what we were doing.
Right.
We still had a good time.
And we still did okay, so we didn't do great. I don't know if we... I don't think we made it.
Yeah, you guys were doing pretty good.
I feel like we did all right.
We actually ended up having to cut it short.
Oh, that's right.
That's what it was. Okay.
I think you guys had some you know, publisher meetings or whatever.
Right.
You had other engagements, as did some of the other players. But we got through a good bulk of it. We didn't quite get to where you travel, but you definitely got the gist of the game. I mean, the travel part is kind of just the climax where you see,
right.
did we get everything we needed? So you guys were doing pretty good. I think more than anything else, time was kind of your enemy because you guys were collecting a lot, but you were sort of going through a lot of rounds.
We were, So we kept getting the bad cards. And,
right.
So, but yeah, you guys, I mean, you got to experience most, you know, most
of it. I can't wait to play it again, the real version.
It was cool.
Lots of fun.
Now, you tweeted
out. Guys,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you guys get to check out the final board art Unpub?
That's what I was just about to ask you about. Because I think you also tweeted out a copy of the board art.
Oh, did I? Okay. Yeah, so we kind of took an approach, like, I think is super cool with the board art. So, you guys know, I mean, obviously, Van Ryder Games, a big part of our sort of vision and mission statement is thematics, right?
Like, yep.
Thematic games. And so what we did with the board is we essentially laid it out like there's a hand-drawn map, and you're going to place instant photos are the locations, right? So it's almost like the group's been taking pictures of these locations, and you're all huddled over this hand-drawn map with these photos on top, and that's the board. So it's almost like you as players are actually – you can almost feel like you're the characters in the game planning out what's our next move. And then we use the art to sort of, instead of having like a box, you know, a typical Euro game might have a box with a symbol on it to put these certain tokens here. Instead of that, what we've done is we have keys, we have crackers, we have those medical scissors that have kind of the curve at the end,
yeah.
And gauze. And then there's the ammo. Yeah, of course, the bullet. Like bullet casings,
mm-hmm.
And that's where you put the tokens for all the resources. So we definitely try to think like really thematics combining with functionality. And so like on the map, there's a, you know, a fence around your compound, and we actually have the photos of like the survivors inside, and it's almost like a prison sort of structure that you're kind of camped out in. Mm-hmm. So like, Vanessa Kelly, who's actually one of the designer, Michael Kelly's wife, has been doing the art, and she's just like knocked it out of the park. It's incredible.
I was just going to ask who did the art, because it is phenomenal. Yeah, it really is wonderful.
It's really cool. It's very, very, it's a very unique way to do it. And I think it's awesome.
Yeah. So, and we, you know, you guys know I'm big on collaboration. So, I mean, we've all worked together throughout this whole process, and she's been so professional and really great to work with. So I couldn't be happier with where it's at. And you guys, if you're listening to this, you'll be seeing it soon. I hope you'll check it out. It's just, she really captured, you know, the feel of the game.
That's super exciting.
Yeah. So about a week from when this episode airs, right?
Yep. May 11th is the planned launch date. So unless something goes wrong, that will be the day.
Right.
Awesome.
Kickstarter causes problems again.
Yeah. As they are wont to do on occasion.
Well,
not wrong.
I mean, I don't want to limit it to that. If life events happen or something,
Blame Kickstarter. It's okay. Yeah. Everyone else does.
So. Kickstarter's down. What the heck?
Yeah. Right.
They didn't approve it. Oh, man.
It will be, if it's not that day, it will be, you know, within a day or two of that. But
that's your target right now.
I'm expecting it to be that day.
Awesome.
Sweet.
That's great, man. I cannot wait to get out there and see it. So,
absolutely.
And we'll definitely talk about it, too, once it's out there. Again, make sure everybody knows to go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more here about Gunslinger Ramblers and Saloon Tycoon. So one of the things that we've talked about, I think the three of us here, is, and we've actually gotten, I think, a couple of questions on Twitter about this.
Let's clear this up.
Yeah. Are these games going to be set in the same universe? So Mr. Publisher, what do you think?
Yeah. So I think shortly after I decided to sign it, actually, I think I went to Jason or
you did.
Both of you. And I think I said, hey, you know, this is kind of cool. These can sort of exist in the Ramblers universe, I guess is what I call it. But,
sure.
I've definitely given a lot of thought to that. It's too early to say like 100% sure, like that's going to happen. But I think there's a lot of really good reasons to do that.
Right. I think seeing some of the characters show up in both would be really fun.
Yep.
Yep. That's one thing we talked about. I mean, we could easily change some of the character names in Saloon Tycoon.
Oh yeah.
Or either way, really.
Right. Or Ramblers even. I mean,
match,
you know.
Yeah. To sort of match how we want to do it.
But I just want to point one thing out, Rob. He said the Ramblers universe, yeah. So suck it.
I heard it. Okay. No. I know my place. I know my place.
Hey,
I get it.
Okay, well, let me
couldn't resist.
Down a level, Jason, because I've also considered altering the name of Ramblers to something like Saloon Showdown or something like that.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
So, and it would be like Saloon Showdown, a Gunslinging Ramblers game or something.
Right.
Or a Ramblers.
I have no problem with that. I'm not married to the name by any means. So, mm-hmm. One thing that I thought was cool, and I'm just going to throw this out here, even though I didn't ask you ahead of time, because we can edit out of the show if you don't like it. But I was telling Rob, like, you know, if you know, assuming Ramblers is awesome and everyone loves it, in Rob's Kickstarter, you could totally, if you had new characters, you could also have a Rambler pack that could be added back to Ramblers with Rob's characters in Ramblers. How cool is that? It's a crossover. It's an actual crossover.
There's tons of stuff. There's so many things
you could do.
Yeah. Well,
another thing I thought of is, like, maybe we could almost make it like where you combine the game. So in other words,
you're just shooting each other.
So Saloon Tycoon would be first, right? Cause you're building your saloon, but maybe we have some like, extension cards, like connection cards where depending how you build or what you build in Saloon Tycoon can maybe like start you off with a certain character in Ramblers or
some kind of
benefit.
Oh. I mean, ooh, you could also, like in Ramblers, since that Kickstarter will be first, you could have a special Kickstarter bonus that's a special tile for,
The only
catch is with that, you have to know exactly what you're doing with the tiles then for Tycoon, and that may be a little early, but it'd be kind of cool, right?
Everything's subject to change. That wouldn't be hard to, I mean, if we had to change it based on testing, backers would understand that.
It'd just be kind of neat, right? Like, you know, like Ramblers comes with a tile for your next game. So like, hey, you probably should buy my next game too.
You know, but I like that idea of combining them, even if the two games are not directly interfacing with each other, but completing one informs the next game you play in the same night.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's cool.
Theme the whole game night around one universe or something with two or three different games. I think that's a really cool idea.
That's an expansion or, you know, there's different ways to be able to do it.
Yeah, that's a neat idea.
There's crossover expansions like Kemet and Cyclades kind of, they don't really necessarily combine the games, but you can kind of use the components in each.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff we could do. I guess my only real concern and the only thing I'm considering, like, you know, why I haven't made 100% the decision is having two Western themed games. Is I'm kind of juggling that in my head because I'm not sure that's the most popular theme.
Right, sure.
And to this point for my label, I've tried to avoid matching same theme for, you know, each of our games has had a different theme. But so that's just a full disclosure, kind of some of the things were, and I haven't even told you guys that, so that's news to you. But
listeners, you're finding out when we did. Well, technically a week later, but
there's some things. So, I mean, this is the cool thing. You guys can kind of get in the publisher's head. Like, this is the things that you think about. But, you know, I haven't gotten anywhere beyond that as far as, like, well, if we did retheme, what would we do? I mean, obviously for Ramblers, it's very unlikely considering a lot of the art's done.
Sure.
Yeah.
And with Tycoon, it's like, I mean, what other, like, kind of, you know, building, I haven't been able to think of anything that would work, which is a good thing for me because it tells me, hey, this game is thematic because that's what I look for. So,
well, to be honest, the game started as a medieval themed idea. And it turned into an Old West thing just because I realized that I like Westerns better than fantasies, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Innkeepers.
Fantasies, though, I mean, Jeff, generic fantasy themes feels a little generic for Van Ryder. Just saying, you know?
I never say never. But I'm very, very likely to do some sort of fantasy game at some point.
Sure.
I mean, that's...
I still feel like it'll probably be thicker with theme than most fantasy games are, if you're going to do it. I mean, it's not going to be like, here's the game. Oh, and by the way, it's set in, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's like it's certainly
the 1500s also. Yes.
So, but yeah, that's kind of cool that we have. It's cool to even just have that option to do it in the same universe. So
I wonder if there's a way to retheme it as building a pirate ship.
Or a pirate town.
Yeah, I was just going to say, or a pirate town.
Yeah.
That's cool. You have my attention.
Yeah. Okay.
Ships coming and going, right? Ships could be bringing supplies in.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this whole conversation, but.
No, but so there you go. You got, there's my thoughts to you guys. You can think about that, Rob, especially.
All right.
So, let's talk a little about where we're at with both games. So Ramblers, right now, we've done a lot of playtesting. And I've got some new changes that I still have to test in. Is it okay if I talk about those new changes?
Yeah.
So one of the things, the biggest feedback we had, as constructive criticism on the game at Unpub was, when you try to see if someone's cheating, the biggest piece of feedback people gave us was, I feel like it doesn't matter if they're cheating or not, other than the fact that if they're not, you know, if I call you on, you're not cheating, they were getting a bonus, right? But the problem with that was, you can never use more than three dice, right? And because you can never use more than three dice, if I have three dice, there's literally no reason for me to not cheat, because if you catch me, no big deal. I mean, or if I'm clean, I don't get a bonus for that. So that was, I think, the number one piece of feedback we got. I think that the easiest way we found to answer that was we added an idea called the bonus die. The bonus die is, so what happens is there's one bonus die in the game. And if I catch you cheating, then I get the bonus die. If I catch you clean, then you get the bonus die. And what made that possible was AJ on the fly at Unpub came up with a new fighting system. It was 1,000 times better than roll your dice and add the totals. I think I've talked about it on the show, but basically I roll my dice, you roll yours, and we look for the highest unmatched die, unmatched number, on a die, and that number wins. Am I describing that correctly? I
mean, it's right. It's from like Risk is the original that did that.
Right.
Spartacus does that. There's other games. What it changed fundamentally is it gives someone rolling fewer dice a much better chance of winning.
Right, because if I have one die and I roll a six, even if you have three dice, I still have a decent chance of taking you out with that six, which is really cool. That's a cool feeling when that happens.
Yeah, it's great.
I roll 3, 3, 4, you win.
Right.
Whereas in that same scenario, I'm going to have, if we just add them up, I have 10 and you have six. You almost have no chance.
Exactly. The other concern that we had, that we fixed really quickly at Unpub, and I actually got to test that a lot at Unpub, and I was glad for it, was people would complain, like, their favorite thing to do was to call someone out, right? So we had two things come out of that. One was, I get ticked when I roll and don't find out if someone's cheating, and I wish there was a way for me to try again. And other people said on the opposite of that, why would I not call someone out? I feel like I should always call someone out 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. So we thought those are two things to address. So the first thing was, okay, let's let you reroll. How do you reroll? Well, we thought you've got this bank of whiskey tokens you're earning throughout the game. Not the ones on your character that you're drinking currently, but once that character passes out or dies and you put those into your reserve pool, mm-hmm. we thought those are points at the end of the game, but what if you could spend those? Like, what if I could choose to spend those to reroll my dice just for the purpose of seeing if you're cheating? It's like almost like I'm sober up, right?
Yeah.
And what's so awesome about that is people feel empowered because they get to make the choice. And what's even more awesome is watching someone reroll five times, lose 5 points at the end of the game, and then die in a gunfight.
It's awesome.
It's so great. And you know what? The person even thinks it's hilarious because, like, how are you mad about that? Because they know that what they're doing. Yeah, they're choosing it.
And those are points too. I mean,
exactly. I mean, you lost 5 points, and then somebody else just gained the pot and the points of your Rambler. So people really like that, so much so that I started giving people a whiskey token in their reserve pool at the beginning of the game so that even on turn one, they could do that. And that was very positively received. Such a small tweak that mm-hmm. just made people's day.
Actually, Chris Kopak and Andy Lennox are probably like, we came up with that at Origins because
they did.
We actually did. We came up with that at Origins and then
I forgot that they came up with Origins, and I kept playtesting it without it and kept reporting the same problem to you.
Yeah. Well, I was like, no, I mean, I think we sat down at that pub and I was like, didn't we say we're going to do this? And you were like, oh my God. Yeah.
Luckily it was like the first game of it I played at Unpub. So then every game after that had that. And then the other thing I introduced midway through Unpub that really people liked was if you are not part of a gunfight and did not win the pot, you get an extra card, an extra poker card. Now, so you basically, I give you a poker card and then you discard a poker card, but that does, it gives you some extra choice. It gives you two more poker hands because each card has two to look at. The idea being that if I'm consistently losing, I should keep getting more options to help me do better in the next round. It's like you're focused on, thematically, the argument is you're focused on playing poker. Mm-hmm. The other people are focused on drinking and having gunfights. So that really helped change the dynamic of the game. And it made me say, well, the next round is worth more money. So I'm going to abstain from fighting this turn, get another card, and hope to win the next round. And people really like that.
Yeah, or maybe you want to use the power of one of the low cards.
Exactly, yep.
It's, man, it's such a simple thing. It's such a good idea. I was like, why did we not think of that?
right.
That's
I know.
One of those things you're like, that's like, it's perfect. It's a good catch-up mechanic. Yep. The game, I think I played the first one, actually, or maybe one of the first two. And, man, nothing went right for me. And I just got, you know, I had no chance.
Right.
It was awesome. Like, I had so much fun, but, like, I was out of it. And it was like, man.
And that's,
and then I thought about later when you came up with that, or whoever came up with that idea, I was like, man, if I would have that, I would have many more options. That's a great change.
Well, in full disclosure, you and I going into it, our biggest concern was, if I'm third or fourth position every hand for the entire game, I never got to gunfight and theoretically to us, and I never had fun. And that never was an issue. But we were always afraid it was going to be an issue. So this was a way
happen.
To,
it's very unlikely, but I mean,
right. This makes
honestly,
sure that
like,
that should not happen
like that. They're probably
doing something wrong.
I don't want to put too much on the player, but it's probably there.
Well, and what's cool is this helps them not do that. This giving them that extra card every round just makes their life a lot easier. And what's cool is that compounds. So you're going to get those bonus cards to be looking at as you build to the third round, because the game is played in three cycles. You know, each one is three rounds, and the third round is always worth the most points or the most money. So, you know, that helps you build to that kind of that showdown. I think,
you know, everyone played at Unpub and people play it the first time. I think that, and look, there's not, you know, it's not going to be the deepest game you've ever played, but there's definitely more depth than people realize when they play
right.
it the first time.
Absolutely. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No one thinks about, hey, I need to plan and save and strategize for winning the third hand because it's worth three times as much as the first hand.
Right.
Like, but as you play more and more, you can see those sort of things coming up and say, hey, do I want to hold on to this card or use it now? So, you know, but yeah, there's dice rolling, you know, a lot of it's going to be, you know, if you don't roll well, you're not going to do that well, but there's ways to overcome that.
I feel like we've done a good job, and based on player feedback, I think we've solved a lot of the, you know, quote issues that we saw in playtesting, and that feels good to have worked through those issues
make people like the game. What gamblers you choose, I mean, you could go for a fighting strategy and just basically steal pots, or you could go for, hey, what's going to give me the best chance to win pots through the poker hands, and that's viable, because I think the game I played, the guy just like won a bunch of poker hands, and we couldn't quite take him out in the fights, and
Yeah. So, well, hey, we've talked a lot about this, so I feel like we should talk about Saloon Tycoon.
That's okay.
Yeah, let's definitely do that. So, do you guys mind if I sort of tell my side of the story? And
please,
How I discovered it.
Yeah.
So Unpub this year. This is your first year going, Rob, so it's awesome that you brought it.
It's a pretty good year for Rob.
Yeah. Speaking of that, congratulations on Tea Party.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So basically, I was at Unpub scouting, and I've sort of, this is my third year. The first year I went as designer and publisher, which I realized quickly I cannot go there and do both. and so since then, I've sort of swung more to publishing than designing. But But yeah, so I was there, and I was, you know, my method, and, you know, I'm just one publisher. I may be even be doing it wrong. Who knows? But I've sort of transitioned more to just kind of walking around and observing, because I feel like I can get so much more information watching playtesters play and seeing their emotional response. And are they having fun? Do they look bored out of their mind? Then I necessarily can't. I mean, I can do that if I'm playing a game, but I may sit in a game for an hour, 2 hours, and that's one game I've got to scout. So Rob probably noticed, and was probably either, I don't know if you were freaking out or like, what's this guy doing? But I kind of was like standing around sort of watching Saloon Tycoon. and before this, Jason, you had kind of said, hey man, you should check that out. That's sort of up your alley. And I'll be 100% honest with you. I was kind of like, I don't think that game's up my alley at all. I was kind of like, well, okay, yeah. And honestly, yeah, like the first day, I walked by it, and I was like, yeah. And, you know, you had Tea Party and that one side by side. Well, art on Tea Party looked awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
And Saloon Tycoon, you know, a little more raw. But,
yeah,
you know, I was like, hey, that's, you know, looks like pretty cool. Doesn't really look like, a, you know, something that thematic that I'd be into, but. But then, so like the second day, you know, I'm over talking to Jason, and you guys are right next to each other. So I don't know if that was intentional, but that was kind of cool.
I think they did that on purpose for us. Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. And so, you know, I'm kind of walking around watching some Rambler's hands, and I'm, you know, seeing players play. And I kind of walk over. I'm like, well, let me take a look at this. And by this time, I had actually gotten some bad news. We had a death in the family. So I was going to have to leave that night, basically. So I was 3 hours from going to the airport, and this was Saturday. So I'm like checking out the game, looking at it, and I'm like, this is kind of interesting. Like the building up of the tiles got my attention. I was like, that looks kind of neat. And you know, there's games that do that. Pagoda is one that comes to mind, where you sort of build up using pieces in between the tiles. And that's what Saloon Tycoon does. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, that's, you know, that's kind of neat. And I, you know, I'm watching players drawing cards, doing actions. I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool. And so right about then, some woman walks by. I'm standing right there, and she I don't remember if you were like to the side, Rob, or you had stepped away for a minute, and the players were just playing.
Yeah.
And she like, I think touched your shoulder or your arm or something and said, this is the best game I've played here, you know, by far. And I'm like, that's interesting. I was like, I didn't think this at the time, but now I'm like, did Rob plan that? I know you didn't, but that'd be pretty smooth.
Boy, that would have been smooth if I'd actually done that.
So that kind of stuff gets my attention, right? Like, that is hot, heavy praise. And that's the kind of thing when I discovered Tessin that I was seeing, and people were just like, man, that Tessin game, it's great. And that kind of stuff really matters to me. That's the kind of things I can't get or maybe won't get if I'm just, you know, sitting in the game. I wanted to play the game, but then, and was going to ask to, but that's, you know, you guys know what happened, and I had to leave.
Yeah.
So sort of at that point, and just seeing the reactions of the players, watching a few rounds, I was like, this game looks pretty cool. So I went over to you, Rob, and said, hey, man, I'm not going to be able to play this. I got to go, but would love for you to send me an evaluation copy. So I left. That was that. And went home. Oh, and you were like, of course. You were like, yeah. You
know, yeah, of course.
That's cool. And so we kind of went through that process, and you sent me the game really quickly, so I appreciate that. And you said, hey, look, you know, there's some other people looking at this. I was like, okay, yeah, and that's fine, and that happens. Like, the same thing happened with Salvation Road, and basically my position as publisher is I'm not going to rush to a decision, and I have to go through my evaluation period. So if it would have happened that someone else, you know, decided they wanted it, or and you guys have talked about this, that happened to Unpub before, where people made really quick publishing decisions, but those reasons you guys talk about is exactly why I do not do that. because I don't want to get right. in a situation where I find out later the game is not going to work and I have to renege or backtrack on an offer I made. So, you know, did the evaluation period, was able to test several times over, you know, just a few nights. It's really accessible, quick playing game. You know, my wife loved it. She's like, of all the games you've done, this is the one, you know, I like the most. I'm like, wow. Okay. Play with my friends and a couple of friends of mine, you know, the husband, he kind of likes a mix, but he definitely leans Euro. And she's like, doesn't even care about theme at all. She likes competitive, like, you know, very, very mechanical Euro games. And both of them really loved it. And I was like, wow, that's cool. So that means they're sort of, you know, it's a good hybrid, which is really, in my opinion, the best thing you can have, which is great theme, great mechanics. So they're, you know, I definitely use their feedback and opinions to sort of weigh my decision. And ultimately what it came down to for me is it thematic enough? Do I feel like this game, I can give people a thematic experience where it tells a story? Because the game was good. We all loved the game, had fun. And obviously I decided that we could, and I think that very much so. And I cannot wait to see what the tiles are going to look like with final art and like built up. And you're, as a player, you're going to get to see this creation you've made during the game, but you're also competing for points. And I think players are going to love it. I can't wait to help bring your creation to life, Rob.
Yeah. I'm super pumped about it. So yeah, me too. I just want to see it happen. And I think maybe at some point down the road, we can talk about, once we have some more time to develop some of the changes you want, we can kind of come back to this, maybe have another conversation on the show about some of the stuff that you've pushed me towards, that I've come to be really, really into some of the ideas that you've put forth. So, but I think that's the conversation for a later show, because we're running out of time and we still need to pitch a game for you.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do that.
So
we looked at your BGG list of wants and we thought, you know, you've got a game from each of us.
Because recently you put a list on BGG
of games that you're saying, hey guys, any designers out there that have games that fit any of these criteria, this is what I'm looking for. It's really awesome you did that. I wish every publisher did that.
Right.
That'd be super helpful. You know,
well, yeah, I kind of just thought about it. And I was like, man, if I just tell people what I'm looking for, I have a much better chance of finding a game that right. I like and want to publish.
And there's like no risk. I mean, the risk is you might get too many things and then you just, you know what I mean? Decide the ones you don't want. I mean, it's free to say no, but it also makes people feel less afraid to come to you because they're like, oh, well, hey, this game fits that vein. So Rob and I decided, since we're so awesome, we're just going to go ahead and pitch one to you right off your list. And we looked on the list and it was some cool stuff. The one that jumped out to us the most though, was the idea of a board book, a children's style board book, that where you flip the pages and it was, you know, as you flip the pages, it was new boards to play on as the game progressed. And that is stinking brilliant.
It's a super cool idea. Yeah.
So you guys mind, I'm going to read, if you don't mind, real quick, exactly sort of what I had.
That would be awesome.
So I said, a book/board game hybrid. Think of a book like those children's board books. Each new page is a mini board game in itself. Maybe there are cutouts in the pages for placing pieces and such. The overall adventure will play out a story. It is key that it doesn't play out the same each game. This could work well for solitaire, but doesn't necessarily have to be limited to that. Fantasy theme would probably be good, but open to other themes.
All right.
Yeah. So I think obviously fantasy theme is the right choice for that.
Right. A fantasy fairy tale even style theme.
Or some
theme.
Kind of adventure. I mean, you could do anything that's kind of an adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think of like, you could totally do that with like the Hobbit theme or the Lord of the Rings style theme.
Sure.
I mean, my first thought is this, like, so I like the idea of boards, right? Like the boards in the book are different boards in the game. And you want it to play out differently every time. So I think you make it like a choose your own adventure style. And just to say, like, if each board has multiple paths that exit the board, right? It would tell you what page to go to for to set the next board up. Do you agree with that, Rob?
Yeah, I'm on board with that. On board.
I see what you did there.
One of the things that occurred to me, though, with making it a different experience each time is a lot of those board books have, like, cutouts or recessed sections. And the book could come with like, pre-cut tiles that fit into those cutout
sections. Magnificent bastard, you know? That's great.
And so the part of the theme or part of the story is that the players are magicians in this fantasy world, and they can use their magic to change the path in front of them, is what I'm thinking.
That's nice.
Okay. So that's cool.
Yeah.
That's what you got.
Where I am so far with that.
So the idea is that, yeah, you're moving through this world and you can interchange tiles into the book.
Right.
Right. So I
like your idea of choose your own adventure and flipping to different pages. So I think everybody on page one, your pieces always start on the same starting spot. And then there are going to be, on each board, there's a cutout. And the cutout will route your path either direction A or direction B. And as you're on page one, so you're going to, depending on which cutout you put there, that's going to route you to, page 22 or whatever, you know, and then you might be flipping back and forth between to pages you've already been on, but taking a separate path on that same page.
You know, what might be really cool with that too, to start out with, is like kind of a hidden goal thing, right? Like I have a card that says you need to go to this page and do X, this page and do X, this page mm-hmm. and do X. Maybe it's multiple cards, right? Maybe it's like I have three cards, and as I achieve those during the game, I can flip those over because it's like I'm searching for something, or I'm trying to have this specific adventure, you mm-hmm. know, and these are the feats that I have to perform on my adventure.
Yeah. So I think it's an adventure, and it's a group of adventurers, you know, 2 to 4 adventurers that are on this journey, and
so
they
it's competitive then.
Yeah. So and there is one overarching goal that they all have, like let's say slay the dragon.
Right.
But and if they get to that point, then everyone wins, you know, or if they fail to slay the dragon, then everyone loses. But along the way, you want to try and influence the direction that the party goes with your specific brand of magic to because everybody's going to have their own one little goal, that their own personal goal. And so you want to slay the dragon as a group, but you also want to achieve your own personal goal.
Well, and I think you could have it be if you don't slay the dragon, everybody loses.
Yeah.
But if you do slay the dragon, then you look at the personal goals. So everybody wins, but Rob wins the most because mm-hmm. Rob, you know what I mean? Rob achieved his goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think multiple goals would be cool, right? And what could make the game a little more dynamic is those goals could be locked to. So if I'm playing as a character, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could have special abilities built in that unlock each time I get a goal achieved, right? So say I have 4 special abilities and 4 goals, mm-hmm. right? So if I unlock, when I achieve my first goal, it unlocks a special ability that benefits everyone, right?
Mm.
So like, you kind of like, if we're going to slay the dragon, I kind of got to let Rob win a couple because I need him to have the powerful spell that's going to, you know, the nuke spell that's going to help take out the dragon, right? And if we don't have that, we're not going to win. But if I let Rob get that, crap, he's going to get closer to winning,
mm-hmm.
which is terrifying because, you know, I want to win. So I kind of like the push and pull of that, right?
Yeah.
Like I have to let you achieve some goals for the good of the group.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that if I let you achieve too many goals, you're just going to run away with it and win. And I think, so maybe if you have 5 goals, 4 of them will unlock abilities. And the 5th goal is completely secret, right? So they're all secret, but you reveal them as you go. But the 5th goal is not revealed until the game ends.
Is that too many goals though? Every 4 players,
so maybe
5 goals?
So maybe it's 3. 4, 3 goals.
I think 3.
And the 3rd goal, though, yeah. So the last goal is not shown until the game ends. So like when we slay the dragon, we all flip over our goal cards to show whether or not we achieved it, right?
Okay.
So it would have to be something that would be very clear
mm-hmm.
that yes, during the game I achieved mm-hmm. this goal.
So in it, it's probably a random shuffle, a random deal for what your goals are.
It could be, but you could have super specific goals, like there are 3 different goals to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
That I randomly get dealt one for my wizard, right? So my end game goal is one of 3 things. So you know that it's one of 3 things, but trying to track that for 4 players is mm-hmm. tough to kind of count those cards and track what was he trying to achieve that goal?
So then every page of the storybook, in addition to having the cutout, is going to have some standard goals printed on them.
Right.
And some of the cutouts, though, could also have goals on them.
Yes. So yeah. I could, on any page, I could bring the cutout in.
And these are probably just like little MacGuffins, you know, get the magic tiara, you know,
right.
rescue the fairy princess. And you just kind of have to get to that part and roll a die or something.
Right.
To make them simple.
I mean, probably should have more than just roll a die. Okay. Cause that's kind of lame.
Probably. But. Okay.
I mean, you could also have some sort of resource system built in where you have magic power and you're using said magic power to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wonder if maybe that's too complicated.
Well, I mean, that doesn't have to be complicated. If you have a character card, that like a player board that has stats tracked on it, like with, I have this much power, and when you do things, you gain power. When you spend power, you lose power, right?
Yeah. So I think also because it, practically speaking, if you're on a book and that book could be open and not flat on the table, you know, at any given time, because the book is probably gonna be a little uneven, you know?
Right.
So I think probably in terms of moving a pawn on the board, there's probably just one pawn that represents the entire party because everybody always moves together.
Right. Right. And you could actually have, one of the things in the game could be the leader position, like who's in the leader position that turn, and they get to determine the path you take on any given turn.
And then everybody has their own pawn, but whoever is the leader, their pawn represents the party as a whole.
Right.
Okay.
Well, what's cool about that is you could do a thing where like turn order matters.
Uh-huh.
So like the leader is first turn because they determine the path you're going, or maybe the leader's last, right? So
I like this.
Everybody goes, right? And then at the end, the leader says, okay, well, good job, guys, but we're going to go left, not right. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gives them the ultimate power on that turn.
Yeah, so turn order position should have... There should be four actions that you take, or four things you can do in a turn, and, you know... And
turn order determines what those are?
Yeah, what those are. Oh, yeah, what I your like action that. Can yeah, be yeah. on a turn.
That's good.
Yeah. So whoever goes first determines which direction we travel, but that's all he or she can do on that turn.
Right.
You know?
That's good. So one of the things, for instance, could be like one of my special abilities as the teleporting mage could be like, I can take us to where the dragon is, right?
Uh-huh.
But that's my first achievement.
And then
right?
I'm not good for the rest of the battle on that turn.
Well, but I mean too, like, so you have to let me be the leader to use that spell to get us to the dragon. But that mm-hmm. means you have to let me unlock one of my first achievements to do that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Oh man, there's a lot you could do with screwing people over in a game like this. That would be super fun. And it would look like a kid's book, which would make it even more BA. Right. Cause it'd be like, look, it's a kid's book. Oh my gosh. I just got hosed by my friends. So,
okay.
Hey kids, let's play a game. Going down.
So how's that so far, AJ? What do you think?
That's cool. There's some ideas in there I like. I like the paths thing. And then when Rob said putting tiles in, my head jumped to what if the each side of some of the tiles had different paths. So that's how you choose which way you go.
Sure.
Oh yeah, that's a great idea.
Do something like that. But then the turn order one, that's a really good one. I love games that do that. And then sort of my vision was like each page would be different. So maybe on one page, turn order matters in a certain way. And another page, it matters in a different way.
That's great. Of course.
That is great.
And then sort of along the tiles idea line, like I was thinking some pages could just have dotted lines for a card. So like you guys said, hey, you always have to get to the dragon. Maybe it's... There's 10 cards that, you know, the quote unquote boss at the end is different each game. You sort of just, maybe it's random or maybe it's determined at the beginning. But yeah, I think it'd be awesome. Someone pulled out one of these board books and gamers would be like, what are we doing?
What that? Yeah. It'd be completely disarming too.
I think it would blow minds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think it would be that expensive to produce. I think, if you try to put dice in it, then storage might become an issue. Like, how do you like tiles and cards are pretty easy. You have a sleeve in the back or something.
Well, they make these kids' books now, and I don't remember what they're called. I'd have to look at it, but basically, there's a plastic compartment built into the book in the bottom. So it's like a Thomas the Train book, and there's little Thomas the Trains in there, right?
Hmm.
So like, you could actually have like cubes or something in there. I don't know that you could fit dice, but you could have like cubes, you know. Mm-hmm. And the player boards could just lock into the pages, right? They could be like just the same size as the paths. So like every page, you have all the things. So when you put it away, you just fill in all the pages. It doesn't matter what order. And then when you open the game, you take all those out and then you mix. Oh, wow. Yeah, that could be super compact. Like, it'd be like, I've got a book.
Yeah.
I've got a book in my bag that's got a whole freaking game in it that's amazing. Man, that's some good stuff. I like that.
Yeah. So other designers listening, I just want to mention there's several other ideas I put out there.
And yeah.
I'm not going to go through them all, but if you want to see them, you can go to my publisher page and look in the forum, publisher page on BoardGameGeek.com. You can find this. There's only like two posts in my forum ever, and that's one of them. So you can go see what some of the other ideas were if you're interested in that. Who knows? Maybe one day one of these games will happen.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So it's a great idea. So
cool.
Hey, we are running super short on time here. So
yeah,
we should probably move on.
So we want to give you one more chance here to do whatever plugs that you need to do, sir. So Salvation Road again, hitting on the 11th.
Yep, Salvation Road, May 11th, launch date. Really excited about that. It's really a busy and fun time right now for Band Rider. Hostage Negotiator is on the cusp of being delivered. I actually got 50 advance copies, and those are going out to some lucky backers right now. And then when the rest of them get here, those will go out as well. So that'll be hitting shelves soon for you guys. If someone was not able to back the Kickstarter or pre-order, maybe look for that if that interests you. Gunslinging Ramblers will be next on the agenda as far as development goes. We'll probably develop. We're already developing Saloon Tycoon sort of in tandem. Mm-hmm. But Ramblers will sort of take lead focus, I guess. And hopefully we can, we're pretty far down the path for that. It's just going to be a matter of,
I feel like it. Yeah.
Tying off all the loose ends and then just the tedium publisher work that I have to do. and you know, I'm not the fastest, but we're getting to where we do maybe a couple games a year. So,
it's a good pace.
So that's next. And then Saloon Tycoon, I don't think it'll be that much longer after that one. I think is going to the development, or I'm sorry, the publishing piece of that one, I don't think will be as difficult, just because of how accessible the game is and clear components. So yeah, look for those two in the future. And then, more Hostage Negotiator Abductor packs will be coming out. So that's kind of what 2015, early 2016 looks like at a glance.
Awesome.
And in other exciting news, this year will be my first year having a booth at a con. So
oh, cool.
Plans are to, well, not plans. It's going to happen because I've already locked it down, but we will have Van Ryder Games. Will have a booth at Board Game Geek Con this year.
Nice.
So awesome. I'm really looking forward to that. I have, this will actually be my first time going to that con in any capacity. But they have really affordable rates for booth space. And I just figured it's all board gamers. So it's all target audience.
Yeah.
A con to cut my teeth on.
And that's in Texas, right?
It's in Dallas.
Dallas.
So, you know, I looked at some of the other cons and, you know, some of them are so big, they scare me a little bit. And, you know, you've heard of things like, you know, Phil from Fifth Street, you know, had some trouble and he did Gen Con one year and it didn't seem to pay off. So I'm just kind of being careful with my approach on that. And so if anyone's going to be at Board Game Geek Con, come see us. I'm sure we'll have copies of Ramblers and Tycoon in some capacity. That's I guess it.
Super okay. Cool.
Well, yeah. Thanks again,
man.
AJ, for hanging out with us, and we're thrilled to be working with you here on these games. It's super awesome, and thanks for sharing so much with us tonight. Because I'm sure all the builders out there appreciate hearing a publisher's perspective on a lot of this stuff. So, thank you very much for all that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And as always, anytime you guys want to talk about anything from publisher perspective or like you said, Rob, or how we develop the games, because I think that actually would be some insight really interesting to designers that are not yet published.
it almost will help them prepare with their design before they even get to that point. So anyway, I have a tendency to ramble. So you guys can, you need to cut me off when I do that.
All right. Well, we'll wrap it up here.
So, thank you again. And yeah.
And thanks everybody out there for listening to this show. We really, really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland. I am @poorly_designed. And Van Ryder Games is
VanRyderGames.com. Ryder is with a Y.
All right.
And you can find me on Twitter as @VanRyderGames, no spaces.
All right, cool.
Awesome.
Don't forget to call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG if you want to ask us questions. And come on back again next week where we're going to have another crazy, mixed up, probably pretty dumb TV show podcast. How about that for you to listen to? And good night, everybody.
Good night.
See ya.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
I think, you know, through the end of this year and into 2016, it's going to be a really exciting time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally. Did we get a weird little beep there?
Was that on your side, AJ?
Oh, that was my wife coming in the house. I think it was, I can't believe the speaker picked that up.
It was weird because it was like, did my phone just make that noise? What just happened? We're looking around at all the electronic devices around us here.